This is Professor Allen, and welcome to the Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will select with some degree of randomness. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 47th episode of the Quarterbin Podcast, I'm looking at Shadow, Song of the Dragon, Book 4, from DC Comics, covered it in April 1992. But first, a little feedback on episode 45, Thor 364, the first issue in Simonson's Frog Thor Saga. Chris Michael, a longtime listener of the Fire and Water podcast, was quite amused by the Shag appearance, and what a find for 25 cents. This is definitely up there in terms of value for your 1/4 of a dollar. That's one of the great things about doing this podcast, Chris. I have found scores of really good books at excellent prices. He adds, one of my first comics was Thor 373, and it contains a callback to this period of Thor when Puddleglump appears in Central Park to clue him in to the mutant massacre events playing out in the sewers. I still remember my young mind trying to grasp the fact that Thor had been a frog. I can see that that's a lot to process, Chris. By the way, Chris is the host of the solo show Mythmaking ETC, a podcast where in about 30 minutes, he covers a single book from his collection, often from the 80s or 90s. Occasionally, he'll run a little bit of a series in his podcast. He's currently looking at some Wally West books. I just think it's safe to say that if you like this show, you'll probably like that one too. As I told him, we short-form solo podcasters need to stick together. So check out Chris's show. The man in question, the irredeemable Shag himself, commented on his appearance in episode 45. The single greatest out-of-context and unapproved podcast appearance I've ever made. LOL. My thanks to Professor Allen. And I love Simonson's run on Thor. I own several of the trades, but I've only read the first one or two. I need to get back to those. Keep up the good work here on the Quarterbin. Thank you, Shag, for the feedback, and thank you for being a good sport. By the way, in maybe a month, maybe a little bit longer, Shag will be making his first official appearance on the network. And I actually do quibble with his contention that his comments were, quote, out of context. Shag proclaiming a woman as hot is never out of context. Our old buddy Shlomo admitted that he's never read this issue of Thor and confessed that it didn't really sound like his kind of thing, but I did catch the part about how much you liked Beta Ray Bill, and we all know how much you like Rom, so I wanted to make sure you could see this in case you hadn't already. And he linked to a deviant art sketch of Rom hanging out with Beta Ray Bill. Thanks, Shlomo. I appreciate that. But now, let's get on to the issue for this episode. Shadow, Song of the Dragon, Book 4, had a cover price of $4.95, meaning I acquired this book at an unbelievable 95% markdown. The cover, by Michael Davis Lawrence, shows Shadow in profile in the dark with a long sword drawn. She's looking out past the reader, and it is moody and effective. The story, titled The Black Dragon, was written by Mike Grell, with art by Michael Davis Lawrence and Gray Morrow. The story itself starts in the Tokyo office of the younger of our two brothers in question. This is the Oyoban, the leader of the Yakuza. He gloats to his assistant, knowing that the sword is coming to him. The lieutenant cautions him, warning that the sword will spark a bloodbath, as every other Oyoban will seek to gain it for himself. The concern is that a power struggle among the Japanese crime lords could allow the Italian mafia to take over the drug market of Russia and Eastern Europe. But the brother is unconcerned. Let them try to take the sword from me, if they can. Back with our crew, the older brother tells his family history to the older American vet, the Korean vet, that his father was eager to answer the Emperor's call to fight the Americans. It was what he dreamed of and longed for, to die for his country with his sword in hand. A glorious death. The American, Mr. Ryan, understands what the monk means. We were so eager to be men, and we would have given anything to be kids again. The two men look over, and they see the black vet, Max Pearl, speaking with Shadow, telling his own war story. He tells of his regular nightmares, nightmares of his own actions in the war, as well as of stealing his buddy Richie's identity. Then I got arrested in Detroit. I knew if they checked my fingerprints, they'd know who I really was. So he beat up the cop and headed for Memphis, did some odd jobs, staying off the grid as best he could, and eventually found his way to the monastery. Live now, Shadow encourages, from this moment forward, not in the past. Pearl tells her that he is afraid. And then they smooch. And they smooch some more, and this leads to other adult-oriented activities. In Max's arms, Shadow tells him of Oliver Queen, how they were more than lovers and less than friends, how she took from him, how it was wrong. His life is bound to another, and I knew that from the start. Yet when she looks at their son, she can't believe it was wrong. He was the only man I ever knew until now. Back in Tokyo, things are also heating up, although in a quite different way. The assistant points out to the younger brother the obvious. Twice we have failed to recover the sword, to proceed with the plan before it is safely in our hands could be disastrous. He assures the Oyuban that he only speaks as a friend in urging such caution. The Yakuza leader is not concerned. As for the sword, it will come to me. My brother will bring it to me. He has no choice. At the same moment, the older brother is explaining why he must bring the sword to Tokyo. Giri. I cannot explain it, but it is what must be done. Part of it is family duty, part of it is the memory of his dead brothers at the monastery. The slaughter will continue, unless he is stopped. But he's your brother. It is what must be done. Shadow tells the Americans that they did not understand the ways of Yakuza, or they would not question what must be done. The older vet comments that Shadow knows the Yakuza way well, and that she is taking a risk joining their journey. But Shadow leaves her son behind in the village, where they know him and will take care of him. And if she does not return, then he will grow up to be a fisherman instead of an archer. What must be, shall be. Before they depart the village, Shadow and Max have a quiet moment. I just thought we would have more time, she says. Who knows, he replies. In Tokyo, all the Oyobans meet. The younger brother thanks them for coming early in the day. At dawn, the dawn of a new era. He proposes the alliance to exploit Eastern Europe before the Italians can, and then he kills the first man to oppose him. The others are outraged, and the younger brother points out that the room is full of weapons, and any of them can take one and challenge him. He then takes off his shirt, pointing out the dragon tattoo that he has on his chest, and that it has a twin on his brother's chest, and somehow these tattoos allow him to feel his brother's approach. His brother, who is bringing the sword, the undeniable authorization to do what I will. Slays the dragon, he says, mentioning the fabled sword by name. Another of the leaders objects, claiming that the sword does not exist, except in legend and old story. And then a helicopter appears outside the tall glass office in which this meeting is being held. The older American, the Korea vet, shoots out the glass, and the eldest brother leaps into the room, facing down his brother. I see you've already begun your quest for power. You didn't even wait, and the brother reveals the sword for this. As they begin their final confrontation, the older one reminds his power-hungry brother that the Yakuza way of life is also a way of death. The helicopter goes to the roof of the building and the battle is joined. The trio of Shadow and the two American vets fight their way into the meeting room. Max jumps in front of Shadow and Mr. Ryan, taking a spray of Yakuza bullets to save them. And now, the real Max Pearl is dead. Killed in action, in a manner of speaking. Eventually, the older vet, Mr. Ryan, makes his way to the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington and is able to leave her chrysanthemum at Max's name. But let's get back to Tokyo for now, back to the main event. The eldest brother, the monk, the man who chose the religious life of contemplation, uses the legendary sword and kills his younger brother with a single slash across the chest. And with that, the fighting in the meeting room ceases. Shortly thereafter, still in the meeting room, Shadow approaches the monk, well, former monk now, for by virtue of killing his brother and wielding the sword to do so, he has become Oyaban, the undisputed leader of the Yakuza. "What will you do now?" Shadow asks. And he gives the answer that has become the chorus for this series, the refrain. What must be done? He explains that if he relinquishes his newfound role, the ensuing bloodshed would be unbearable. But if I stay, I must become part of something that is contrary to every doctrine by which I have lived my life. But he has made a decision. I must serve the Yakuza in order to control it. Shadow understands that it is what must be done, but reminds the former monk that his new position changes nothing between her and Yakuza. The former monk understands and makes her an offer to protect her. Yakuza will not pursue her in exchange for your son. Of course, she declines. The new Oyaban, formerly a man of peace and contemplation, grants Shadow 3 days to disappear before he allows the Yakuza to resume their pursuit of her. They bow to each other in deep respect. I pray we will not meet again, Shadow-san, for if we do, it will be as enemies. But she knows this. It is what must be done.
Okay, I'm gonna do the promo now.
Finally. Okay, let's do the promo.
What do you mean, let's do the promo? I'm the one who has to do it.
Well, get on with it then.
Iron Man. The Incredible Hulk. The Mighty Thor. The Captain America.
Being dramatic there, aren't we?
Do you think it's too much? Should I back off?
No, you're fine. You're good.
Okay. You've seen the Earth's mightiest heroes in the Avengers franchise of films. Now you can enjoy the stories that have inspired those films through the magic of comic podcasting.
Magic of podcasting? You sure about that one?
So join Lily Wilson, the awesomest teenage comics fan in the world, as her father takes her through all the early comics that feature characters from the Avengers franchise of films.
And some that aren't in those films yet, but will be. Because we started with Ant-Man before you had a full film.
Oh, well, yeah.
And don't forget Spider-Man. He's not the Teen Avenger, but he's there.
Maybe it should be that feature characters that have been, are currently, or will one day be in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Better. And where should they go not see this magical podcasty goodness?
New episodes can be found at the Complete Marvel Reading Order website, cmro.travis-starnes.com, and clicking under the Podcasts tab. Or on iTunes by searching Complete Marvel Reading Order, or just search for the name of the show itself.
Dad, don't you think we should actually say the name of our show?
Oh, yeah, Avengers Inspirations Podcast. Listen and stuff.
Yeah, good job, Dad.
Thank you.
And we're back. When I got through book 3 of my initial reading of this series, I thought about where this story could go, how it could end, and I came up with the 3 possible scenarios. A, it could end on a downer. The younger brother could win the sword, and using his overwhelming force, leave the older brother, the monk, dead. Shadow in hiding, that sort of thing. Where the message would be, even if you do what must be done, fate will still have her way. B, it could end upbeat with the monk victorious, perhaps by killing his brother, more likely by having him arrested. The monk would take the sword back to a new monastery, and the Yakuza would be shattered. C, the sword could disappear, perhaps spirited away forever by Shadow, or by the American vet, whose desire to return the sword to Japan caused all of this trouble in the first place, and of a mixed ending of some kind. And of course, Mike Grell, being a professional writer, and a really good one at that, came up with D, none of the above. Never, in my wildest dreams, did I imagine that the monk would actually take over the Yakuza, actually using the sword as it was meant to be used, a symbol of the right to rule that vast criminal organization. If you remember, I thought issue 2 moved pretty slow, and I was nervous about how the rest of the series would go from there, but these last 2 issues have been terrific, and that ending, wow, I just never saw that coming. I do want to take a little time here and talk about endings, a couple of things about them. One is something I say a lot, and that is that endings are hard. So I really appreciate good endings, and this was a good ending, a very good ending. A very, very good ending. What it does so well, if I want to pull it apart, is that it does indeed wrap up the plot in a great way, and as I said before, in an unexpected way. Well, at least a way I didn't expect. But it also wrapped up every character's arc, all 5 of them. Both vets, both brothers, and of course Shadow. Each one winds up in a logical, reasonable place, based on the individual journey that Mike Grell took each of these 5 characters on. Now, of course, Shadow ends in basically the same place that she started, but that is standard. She's the ongoing character, so she falls into that illusion of change category that comic books are based on. And she did take an emotional journey during the 4 issues. But the 4 secondary characters had more substantial changes occur to them. We learn a little bit about the brother's father in this issue, and it seems that neither of them could ever really get out from under what their father wanted for them. Again, really well done. The second thing about endings is that there's sort of a debate or discussion among critics, I guess, or just interested parties about endings. This started about movies and novels primarily, but it applies to TV shows and comic book arcs as well. The film criticism podcast Battleship Pretension has wrestled with this a lot, again in terms of film specifically. And the issue is, how important is the ending to one's enjoyment of the work in question? In other words, does a bad ending totally ruin whatever, a movie, a novel, a comic book story? Conversely, can a good ending save an otherwise mediocre creative offering? Or, to put it in more a different way, a more cliche way, is it the destination or is it the journey? And it's not so much a debate as it is a matter of taste. For me, endings are critical. I am crushed by bad endings. And they do really color my view of the entire piece. There are films that in my brain I think of as not good, or novels, etc., just because I don't like the ending. Certainly all of my favorite books and movies have great endings. For me, a great ending is inseparable from a great story. They're one and the same to me. So I say all of that mumbo-jumbo to say that it's possible that I overrate this entire series, because how terrific I feel those last, maybe 7 pages are. This ending really resonated with me the first time I read it last summer when I read the series just to make sure it was worth spending 4 episodes of the podcast on. And then rereading this one for this episode, wow, it really struck me again. It's an ending that's so strong that my opinion of the entire series is that it's an excellent series. And the more I think about the ending and processed it for this episode, and now the more I talk about it in this episode, the more excellent I think it is. I did cheat a little bit on my synopsis, by the way. I rearranged it just a bit for dramatic tension, to end the drama on Shadow's conversation with the monk. The actual final page is the denouement, which is Mr. Ryan finding Max's name on the Vietnam Wall. I mentioned that, but I moved it up in the synopsis, again, for the dramatic effect of the podcast, to be honest. But Grell made the right choice for the comic book, as the story started with Mr. Ryan and his desire to return the sword, so for symmetry of the storytelling, ending with his resolution is the better literary choice. I just thought mine was the better choice for audio drama purposes. Now, back to movie criticism. There is one theory that whatever the final shot of the movie is, what the director chose to give the viewer as the last image of the film, that is the director saying what he thinks the theme is of the film. Again, the last shot of the film is the director's view of what the film is about. And I think Grell may be doing that here by ending with the scene of the vet at the wall. That is his way of saying that the story is about Ryan and about his quest to find closure by returning the sword. And in that scene, there's an interaction with another vet, and Ryan refers to Max as his son. So even though Shadow is the title character and is on every cover of all 4 issues, she really serves a supporting role. And the lead character, at least the character with the greatest arc, may very well be Ryan. By the way, all of this literary theory and the film criticism stuff I'm spouting off here, I am just an interested amateur. And I know that we have some professionals in the audience. So, Neil Stanifer, Tom Panarese, please set me straight if I am mangling or misapplying this stuff. Or if there's something obvious that you think I'm missing here. I do have a few other things to say about the issue as well, not as big picture or literary theory, as the past few minutes have been, so feel free to wake up now. Right here, let me compare my feelings, or my reading experiences, my reflections, after the fact, of the 2 prestige format series we've covered here, Adam Strange, Man of Two Worlds, and Shadow, Song of the Dragon. I had a few problems with some of the characterizations in the Adam Strange story, but I was generally on board with that until the last few pages. The absolute ending of the story was so disappointing, to say the least, that I look back on that series probably more negatively than it deserved, sort of the opposite of what I was saying before. It's possible that the 2 series are actually quite similar in quality for the first 90 or 95%, but the endings are so totally different to me that my views of the 2 series, again, are colored by those endings. I don't know if that's fair. I don't know if my views are in the majority, if others can be so swayed by a great or a terrible ending as I can be. But those are my thoughts on the way this issue concluded the overall storyline. This issue had fewer totally silent pages than the prior 3 books, only 6 of those pages, and only 9 more that had just small bits of text. And this makes sense. Grell had been exploring the boundaries of the longer issues, having more real estate to flex his writing muscles. But here, he needed more narrative and dialogue because he had to finish the story. He had limited space. And again, I think he used that space very well. And of course, we are all veteran comic book readers, so we all cringed when our new lovers professed that they wish they had more time together. You knew right then that he was going to die, right? Because you knew one of them had to die, and Shadow's an ongoing character in the DCU, so nice knowing you, Max. One other moment or scene needs to be mentioned as well. In the scene where all the Yakuza leaders have gathered at the younger brother's place, they are seated at a table. And after he pushes a button, the section of the floor that contains the table lifts up on hydraulics. So the table rises up on its little elevator shaft, 20 stories, 30 stories, I don't know. It settles into place on the top floor. It's pretty awesome. Or, as Emily noted when I showed that page to her, that is pretty pimp. The verdict on Shadow Song of the Dragon, Book 4. I so enjoyed this story, especially this last issue, the ending of the story. This is a certified quarter bin steal. 25 cents for 40-some pages of Mike Grell's writing? Of course. It's a terrific ending to a pretty good series. Now, I totally see how this series is not for everyone. There is no superhero activity, save for maybe Ollie's appearances and a few flashbacks, if you want to count that. This all takes place in a foreign country, and I enjoyed that exotic setting, but it's not where we're used to seeing comic book stories take place. And with the exception of Shadow, there's not another character in here that we know or will ever see again. So there are lots of reasons why this may not be for everybody. I totally get that. And of course, my feelings for how much I enjoyed this are clearly influenced by the fact that I got nearly 200 pages of advertisement-free story on high-quality paper in a nice square-bound format for a buck. Total. All four issues, 25 cents each. So I can't say that I would recommend you going out and getting this at cover price. That's 20 bucks. Way too rich for my blood. So always remember that my recommendations, my feelings, my thoughts on these books, such as they are totally influenced by the super low, low price that I managed to pay for these. That wraps up my coverage of Shadow, Song of the Dragon, Book 4, bringing episode 47 of the Quarterbin podcast to a close. And episode 48, we're making one more trip to inner space as we cover Micronauts number 9 from Marvel Comics, cover dated September 1979. If you have any questions or comments about this issue, this episode, or the podcast in general, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter bin. The Quarterbin podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening. Professor!